You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Hello and welcome once again to Line Noise, where my guest this week is Tisha Matthews, aka Tisha, and her new album Sad Girl is out now. We spoke about wedding DJs, about being sad on the dance floor. We spoke about Cher's Believe and a whole load more. I really enjoyed the interview. I hope you enjoy it too. Line Noise comes to you with support from Cupra. Thanks to them. Your new album, Sad Girl, is out. How do you feel? Good?
Yeah. Feels level, you know, chill.
Did you kind of celebrate it coming out though? I mean, you know.
Sorry, I just dropped my AirPod then. Did I celebrate it coming out? Yeah, we had a launch party celebrate, which had some of the fans could apply to come. So had a bunch of people come down, and then some friends came down, and yeah, that was fun. We had that the day before the album came out. But yeah, after that, it's just on to the next.
But I wanted to ask about the album title, if I may. Is it entirely serious? Is there a bit of tongue-in-cheek to it, or, yeah?
I don't know, what do you mean? Like, you have to elaborate on that.
Well, like, Sad Girl is kind of one of those things that is kind of phrase that's used, and I think some people use it to sort of quite literally, you know, because they're kind of feeling sad or melancholy or down or whatever, and I think some other people possibly use it as a sort of almost to say they're not sad, if you see what I mean. It's almost like, you know, I'm using that, you know, that's kind of what you expect me to be, but I'm not. I'm not sure, like, that's what I mean.
It's pretty literal, as in, like, sad girl as in I'm a sad girl. But I think it also is a little bit of reference to, like, MSN 2000 sort of thing, where you might have that, like, you know, sad girl XOXO at, you know, MSN.com, you know, like that kind of thing as well, as in it's like it might be like a forum name or something like that, but right. It is literal as in, yeah, as in I am a sad person, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And how does it sort of relate to the amazing cover artwork?
About a bit over 10 years ago, maybe, when I was having a really rough time, I had a dream that I was walking on ice, and the ice cracked, and then I fell through the ice into the water. And it was like super, like a really, probably one of the most realistic dreams I've had, where I felt like it was just happening. And I was in the water, I was cold, and I'm like panicking, like, drowning and trying to like get to the top, and it's like I could see the light coming through the crack, and as I'm like struggling, I just kind of say to myself, just let go, just let it go, just let it happen. And then so I did in the dream, and I kind of just sort of like, but it's like I just kind of float down, and it's like a feeling of like sadness, because I was like, oh, I didn't get to say bye to my mum or my husband or whatever. And then, but at the same time, I was like, actually really relieved. You know what I mean? Like, because I was like, oh, it felt like euphoric. So it was, okay, cool, well, I'm done with this. And I woke up like really like crying. It was like a very like real thing. I was like, oh, I thought I died. And so that dream's already stuck with me. So like, when I was thinking about the artwork and stuff, I was like, I wanted to do something related to ice and stuff like that, but I didn't really want to do it like that I'd fallen through the ice and drowned. It was more like I wanted to be like, oh, I fell, but then I pulled myself out, if that makes sense. So like, the idea was me to be on the ice as if I'd come from the water, and base it around that. But then we just ended up making it a little bit more glam, because I was just having a bit more fun with it, you know. It's a cool shot to be on an iceberg.
No, it really is. It really is. But I wanted to ask about sadness, if that's all right, because you make sort of dance music, which a lot of people, I think, you know,
mistake for always being a kind of happy kind of genre of music all the time. It's like, you know, out for euphoric moments and that kind of thing. But what space do you kind of see for sadness and melancholia in like dance music?
I think for me, melancholy, I feel like there's a lot of melancholy actually in a lot of, even in the music that people would see as euphoric, or I just think from where dance music comes from and like the space that you usually listen to it, unless like some of the music I've made, you wouldn't listen to it in a nightclub, you'd probably listen to it at home, but it might be something you listen to post nightclub. But then other stuff, when I think about my most melancholy but slash euphoric moments from when I started making music was around like, say, something like Bonobo or something, which is like kind of one of the people that spurred me to really go for music. And my moments were, we were dancing and you know, having euphoria, but at the same time it was like you were like having sort of weird existential crisis at the same time, you know, you're having like some weird reflection thing happening, and then and there's something euphoric in that in itself. So like for me, I feel like it's always woven in and out of dance music, and some tunes are obviously straight, you know, happy sounding tunes, but some tunes it's like, yeah, I'm having a good time, but then there's like weird feeling, underlying feeling about it.
Do you, if you're kind of, I know obviously going out and is very much your job at the moment and you have to go out a lot, but like, do you, if you're kind of feeling down, are you the kind of person that likes to go out to a club and kind of dance it out, or are you more like, you know, stay at home? And
that's a tough one. I think when I was younger, maybe there might have been a more let's go out and dance it out, or like, you know, just distraction, using it as an escape or a distraction from how I'm feeling and just what's going on around me in my life. I think now not so much, because like, as you say, out is my job, but I'm not really out. I'm just like, I'm on DJing and then I'm like on backstage, you know, I'm not out as much as I would used to be, because yeah, you kind of, sadly, I think when you're DJing, it kind of like loses a little bit of its like weight, because you're always in that space.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it used to be something, dancing, because I studied dance and stuff. Dance just in general used to be something that I like to do as a release. And then doing that in a nightclub space was always felt the best space to do it in, because you weren't doing it as like a performance or as a, you know, you're just dancing. There's no structure to it. So yeah, for me, that going to a club dancing was always a release before, for sure. Now not so much. Now I'm probably just like miserable at home.
Do you have any favorite like sad bangers, sad dance songs?
You know what, I don't know if it's I don't know if you would call it sad, but it does feel, it's still sad for me, it's melancholy for me, and it's euphoric, would be like, there's a remix of a Nathan Fake song. It's like what's it called, it's called like the Icelandic mix of The Sky Is Pink.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just, that's something that I've like had sad moments to, melancholy but like euphoric moments to. And so a lot of Simon Bonobo's songs have that same feeling, I think. And yeah, but then again, that, yeah, I guess, yeah. No, sorry, I was going to think of something else, but it's not really dance music. But I was going to say, like, I used to get quite emotional to like Ludovico, the pianist, back in the day. Not so much now. I don't know why my brain chemistry changed, but yeah,
it's really something. I did that. Going back to the title track, who is Dan Whitlam?
Dan Whitlam is a spoken word, I don't know, kind of like rapper, but not really a rapper, because he doesn't really rap. Like, he's a spoken word guy, but he's doing it to like music now a lot. And yeah, he's someone I just came across online because he'd done some spoken word over my intro song of my last album on social media. And like, he had like clips of him doing it and it was going like viral and stuff. And he had messaged me saying like he loved it and would love to work with sometime. So when I started this album, I had started like the idea for the intro and then messaged him and was like, because he has a great way with words of like kind of conveying the sort of feelings of like, I guess like the everyday person, you know, in different ways and different things that we go through as a, you know, human experience. So like, I was like, what I'll do is I'll give him a guideline. So I just said to him, like, I have this instrumental, if you want to work something over it. I didn't tell him it was the intro, but I just said like, can I give you some feedback, like some things? And I just said, can it say sad girl, lonely girl? And then I just said what it was about and left him to it. And that's what it came back with.
And did a great job.
He did an amazing job, yeah.
Mm. Actually, something that I wanted to ask about, you mentioned you were, you are a classically a trained dancer, right?
Mm-hmm. I was, I wouldn't say now.
Do you think that influences how you program beats?
A lot of people always ask me this, and it didn't with my first early music. I don't think so. I think now that I get, the more I move, because I started out doing house music before, I just never released it. That's like was what I was trying to do, and then things changed, and then I ended up falling in love with more emotional stuff. So that's how I ended up doing that. But then I've kind of now kind of come back around to like more dance, interested in more dance stuff, back to where my first love was. And now I would say it influences, and it would have influenced some of those tracks, grooving and sort of like, because I studied like a course, it was quite like, I did classical like training stuff, I did like ballet and stuff when I was younger, and by the time I got to uni I was doing like hip-hop and stuff, and then I'd learn about house dance as well, like the genre of dance that goes to house music, so like things like that. So now when if I listen to a house beat or something, or making house beat, I'm thinking like of like the movement that you do to house music. Well, you're supposed to, not that anyone dances really anymore in the club. What you would have done, maybe I'm thinking about, you know, in the 90s, but that's why, yeah. So if I do like house beats, it does lean more to something more jacking, more like New York, more like Chicago, if I actually make it like something like that, do you know? But yeah, not all of my music would have been influenced by that, that's for sure.
And you said people don't dance in clubs. Do you mean people don't dance well in clubs, or people just don't dance?
No, I mean, I don't think there's any such thing as like dancing well. I would never say someone's dancing badly like in a club, because it's not really, you shouldn't really need to dance well in a club. I don't dance well in a club. I don't think about what I'm doing. I'm just doing it. And I don't think that's how it should be. It's more that I think, I don't know. I guess it's just the new way things are. But, you know, some clubs people dance. I'm not saying every club, but I just think, obviously, I think I spoke about this quite a lot before, but it's just like with the phones, and then from the phones comes people just there being there for saying that they were there rather than being there to have a, like, let loose. And then I think the sort of decrease in drug use, or certain drug use, because there are other drugs use, things like ketamine and stuff like that people are doing, which don't really lend themselves to people dancing. They're more like zombies. And then, you know, the decrease of use of like MDMA. I'm not saying people should be doing drugs, but I think those things have obviously affected the energy in clubs now. So people stand around a lot more, you know, and they put their hands up for the drop, and then they put their hands back down, and then they stand again, which is strange, but that's how it is.
But you're a lot younger than me. I definitely remember, you know, clubbing in the 90s. And is this kind of something you've experienced like yourself, kind of how things were before, or is it more like looking back on, I don't know, videos or what people say?
No, it's a bit of both. I think I didn't experience it fully in like the sort of like rave scene, because when I, by the time I was 18, I was still in my small town. I didn't move to London until 19, so I had like my first clubbing experiences were in my hometown, and they were limited to like sort of dance music experiences, like dance venues and stuff. It was more either you had chart things happening, you know, because I was from parent towns near Portsmouth, so it was like uni towns, so we had like these sort of like, if it was dance music, it was like Calvin Harris or David Guetta mashups, and then or you had hip-hop R&B. And so I obviously, well, personally I leaned more towards hip-hop and R&B when I had that opportunity to go out, and so there were the clubs doing, but there people were dancing because our phones were shit phones, and I still, the camera I took out was a digital camera still, you know. So if we took pictures, yeah, I'm millennial, I'm still the generation that uploaded, you know, 100 pictures from a night out on Facebook. So I did see a change, not necessarily that directly, like, you know, I wasn't in Ibiza and then saw it like Ibiza change, but I still went from like, my phone was like a grainy picture. So we didn't take pictures on our phones. So we just danced, we got drunk, we danced, and, you know, and I danced all night and my friends danced all night. Like my feet would kill by the end, you know? And so, yeah, I did see a change in that, do you know what I mean? Like, and even then when I came to London and my first like dance club, proper experience would have been like Fabric or something like that, which scale people weren't really that, like, you know, we had iPhones, but they were like not at the level they are now. And I think it was only like a year after that where Instagram sort of popped up. And even then it was like, only, you know, we're just getting on that way of thing. And I think Instagram kind of changed things in terms of what people felt the need to do in the clubs and pictures and uploads and how often they had to do it, and, you know, and then stories and Snapchat and all that kind of like accelerated that stuff, you know what I mean? Because before, yeah, your phone was just with you so you could find your mates when you lost them, you know.
If you had bought credit.
If you had bought credit, yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
I'm actually fascinated because I was reading that when you moved to London, you built a mobile DJ setup. You did things like children's birthday parties, weddings, you know, the classic kind of thing. What did you learn from doing that about like music and DJing? Because I reckon you must have learned quite a lot.
You know, I did, and I'm surprised how much I learned, because at the time I was hating it. You know, the whole thing was a bit of a like, can't wait to stop doing this. You know, it was like, when I think reflect, is like, I guess it's the same with all jobs like in music and DJ and stuff like that. It's like, my reflecting, actually, it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? I got reasonable money for doing something very, you know. But at the time, it was like the death of me to go every day and be like, I've got to play this chart music, or I've got to play this music I hate or whatever. But I did get quite good at it. So, and I did learn, like, you know, I had a vast music library. So, because when you did a wedding or something, you know, you're catering to such a big age range that I had to have like 50 odd thousand or more songs and on hard drives of different genres and different eras. And so I got to learn a lot about different genres, different eras, different music. Like, I got, you know, a lot of soul tracks or things like that. And then it also then enabled me to learn more about being a service and catering to the crowd, you know what I mean? Because I think DJing outside of that, you know, as a nightclub DJ, or, you know, as a kind of type of DJ I do now, you're very much everyone makes you the star, and you're like, you're the thing, you know, that everyone's there for. When really I think it should be that you're providing a service and you're actually there for them, if that makes sense. But so I think I learned that. So it's like maybe more better at reading a room and more flexible in what I play when I'm a DJ. I obviously would never play something I absolutely despise. That would, I couldn't do that. But I found ways over the years to like be like, okay, well, people are liking this sound, not my cup of tea, but let me find the version of that I like, and then I'll play that. Do you know what I mean?
And where do you stand now, like at the moment? Is because you speak, I always think with DJs, I mean, I'm, there's some like some balance between there. People who are like, you know, my role is like to educate the crowd, so I'm going to play all the music I like and kind of do this. And then you get other DJs that are more like, no, like I'm there to, you know, make people dance and kind of, you know, keep them happy.
It's a both thing. I do both, you know, and that's, I think that's what a DJ should be doing is both. You know, there's so, I will play stuff that I know to a certain degree, like I know they're going to like this, but I'm always playing new music. So it's not actually always guaranteed they're going to like this. I'm like, I think they might like this. It's new, whatever. And then there's some songs that I really like. And then it's like, you're going to fucking listen to this, whether you like it or not. And I'm going to play it for as long as I want to play it in this set. And then I'll give you something you want to listen to. So like, it's both. Really, because it is important to show people new music. It's important to show people new sounds. It's important I think that is important. And I think that just balancing it. Because I think if you go into a set where you're like, it does work for some people. And I think maybe I've done that before in the past. But I think you're all very committed to like certain things. And you're absolutely like now bombing the set, like as in like, no one's having a good time and you're just playing, you're the only one having a good time. I think you have to reflect like people paid money to be there. And I think it's arrogant to, I don't know, in a way it's arrogant to be like, well, fuck you. Do you know what I mean? It's something, unless it's a situation where you're like, actually those people knew what they were getting. So it's like, they know that's what's going to get. But if you're in a situation where people like thought you were going to do something else or that, and then you're like, oh, let me just not do that and do what I want to do. It's a bit harsh, you know.
Going back to the album, you're doing vocals for the first time. How did that feel? Was that the vocals are great. Kind of surprised me it was the first time. But like, how did that feel? Was it an easy step or did you sort of agonize about it?
No, it wasn't easy, I promise you. I think I'm not a singer, and I don't think I'll ever claim to be a singer, but I think it was something I always wanted to try after speaking to, you know, I have friends that sing on their work, like people like Elka, who is a good singer, so she sings on her stuff, and then I think people like Ella Vinus, also an amazing singer, but she told me she didn't start singing, you know, she wasn't a singer in the beginning, she was a drummer, she studied drumming, went to a music school for drumming, and then got into production, and then started singing, and, you know, she sounds amazing, but it was just interesting. I was like, oh, okay, these people, there was a way to sort of learn to sing, if that makes sense. And then I read an article about Caribou not always being a singer, and then how long it took him to learn how to use his voice and then to sing live and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, like it's possible. And there's people, I don't know, I won't name, that I don't think are singers that sing, but it works. And I'm like, well, why not me? Yeah, like if everyone else, these other people are doing it, then there's a way to do it. And it's like just learning. I'm sure there's a way, you know, I was like, I'm sure there's a way I can learn to use my voice where it sounds not like pleasant enough that I could then inject more of myself into my music, you know.
And you must be happy with the results.
I am, yeah, I am. Like, I don't think I sound awful, so that's enough.
Green on the album is about toxic positivity. What is that exactly?
I don't know if it's about toxic positivity. I think it's I don't agree. I don't know. Where did you get agreement about toxic positivity? Who said that? Is that from you or is that from somewhere else?
I must have read it somewhere because I don't think I know what toxic positivity is. So I must have read an interview or something like that.
I know what toxic positivity is, but I don't think I've ever said that that's what it's about, unless someone else has taken that as that someone else has interpreted it as that. But green's not about toxic. Green is first of all, toxic positivity is about, you know, when you're you know, it's like super, where things are like super positive, but it's to the point of like you don't acknowledge the realism, you know, I mean, there's no realism, you know what I mean? It's like hard to explain, but I know what it is, and I'm trying to think of an example, but I can't think of it right now. But I think green was written, like the vocal was written when I was just on my own, and I was feeling a bit shit, and it just what came to my head at the time, and I was just thinking about myself for a minute, and I was like, oh, you know, like I've lived 1,000 lives, and like, because I've had like so many different jobs over the years, so many different things, and people, like if I told everyone my whole story, it probably would be a book, because everyone would be like, you know, what the fuck, but like, and I'm just like, yeah, and I've cried so many times, I cried, you know, and just so much shit's happened, and like, you know, I don't know what it's like, you know, when people say the grass is greener on the other side, I don't really know, like, yeah, and that's just kind of how those lyrics came out, and then the rest of the song kind of just was unrelated, but it just kind of fell into place, because it was fun, and I was like, okay, well, actually, it's kind of fun to go from this sort of dramatic, like, because I was thinking of Cher with the synths, like, of, like, Do You Believe and stuff like that, and I was like, let's go from this kind of, like, dramatic thing and then into this sort of fun dance beat. I don't know, I just liked it.
I was going to ask about Believe, but having got it wrong about toxic positivity, I wasn't sure. So it is inspired, like, kind of the synths are inspired by Believe.
The synths, yeah, that's sort of like, yeah, the synths are similar sound. I don't know if it's the same sound, but just like a similar inspired synth sound. And I liked on Cher's song, because I think if you listen to the vocal on it, obviously she had that vocoder, not vocoder, it was like an auto-tune thing they did, didn't they? Like, but if you listen to like the way she's singing stuff, it's actually kind of folky, kind of like country sounding when you actually listen to the way she's singing, and then but then it's on a dance beat, so I was kind of like, it was good referencing like how to do that. And then also that song was the first song that I ever recorded I recorded it off radio on cassette tape when I was little, so I just remember that song was always stuck in my head as a song, and is a reference to something I like used to hear a lot when I was a kid.
Well, it's funny, it's kind of like a sad dance floor song, isn't it, as well? It's if you actually think about the lyrics, they're kind of that borderline, you know, life after love, and but you know, it'll be okay.
Yes, yeah, it's like a cry. Well, they have a playlist called "Crying on the Dance Floor" on Spotify, and that's like the kind of playlist like they put that stuff in.
Have you got on that playlist yet?
I think I might have. Yeah, a few times maybe.
Another song I really like on the album, which is Fight, which is inspired by another song I really like, Born Slippy. What inspired you in that song?
Born Slippy?
Yeah.
I just fucking love the song, so it's just a banger. And I saw them at Coachella a couple of years ago. I managed to catch their set, and immediately, like, I'd never seen them live, so I was just immediately obsessed with them as a live show, the charisma, the everything. And that song, I just like, it was a song that was obviously around when I was younger, and obviously the whole album was referencing things that just were in like as like the musical background of like sort of my early years, so it was just, it made sense to reference it. I liked the techno-y kind of, I like that sound. I never get to do that sound very much, so I just wanted to have that sound on there. And I wanted it just to be a little bit indie, you know, a little bit like I just wanted that feeling they had when he like I saw him like standing up on something and jumping. I'm just like, even though at his age, like he still looked like the coolest fucking person on stage, and I was just like, I wanted a bit of
Do
that.
they have it?
I don't think so, no.
You should make an effort to get them to hear. I reckon they'd enjoy it.
I would hope so. Yeah, try, you know, they're very clever. I love the way they do stuff, and yeah, I just wanted a bit of that crowd surfing vibes.
I mean, you talked about Believe. You talked about Born Slippy. I think you took there. You mentioned like Massive Attack as another inspiration behind the album. How important is it for you to sort of know about this sort of dance music history?
For me, it's important, but I mean, but these are also just were just around, so it's like I just know them because they were there, you know. And I don't know, I think like when I'm making music and stuff, I love like referencing these people because they're someone that they make some of the music that I don't think people make music like that, or they're the first people of those kind of music, do you know what I mean? So now at this point now everything is recycled anyway, do you know? So I'm just like, I like to go back to the first people who made stuff that sound like that rather than, I don't know, listening to the recycled versions. You know,
Yeah, going back to the source.
yeah.
Well, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Hope Australia goes very well. What have you got planned for the rest of the year?
So at the moment, yeah, I mean, I've just been on holiday. So, well, not holiday. I just had a week off. I would say holiday. I was not actually away anywhere. But I live in Ibiza now, but I'm in London at the moment. So I've got ADE this week, and then Warehouse Project next weekend, and then I've got South Africa. Then I'm off to Australia, and then I'm going to take most of December and January off trying to do some writing and just recalibrate because yeah, the year's been long.
No, you lived in Ibiza. Was that sort of half work kind of thing, or?
I moved this year, so it's not been long. But it was I mean, I could argue it was work, but I think it was more just because I fell in love with the place. I got married there last year as well, so I'm like, it just kind of has a effect on me. When I arrived there, I feel happy and very connected to the place. So I moved there just mainly for lifestyle, but also it did help with work because I did 21 shows, so it was most of my shows this year. Well, yeah, it would have been in Ibiza, and now I'm just in the process of buying a house there, and I'm just selling my house here in London and making it like my actual permanent place. Because yeah.
Did you DJ your own wedding?
Absolutely not. No way.
You had to get
No.
someone, I mean, who like, you had to get someone you trusted very well, I presume.
No, I'm just not that like when people ask about like I was like yeah, I'm not gonna try and book Carl Cox to teach my wedding. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not like it's not that kind of thing, you know. I wanted my wedding to be fun and normal. So and I also like to listen to the classics, and I want to sing, you know, the cheesy stuff at the top of my voice. So I got someone from Ibiza who she's Santana, she's lives in Ibiza. I think she's British, but she lives in Ibiza and she plays at Pikes a lot. She has a night at Pikes, but she also knows about all playing all different genres. So I got her to play and she smashed it. You know, I was like, give me my 90s and my 2000s get and my garage and my, you know, and then and some American stuff because we had my husband had an American family. So, you know, we wanted the classics as well as some of the, yeah, modern stuff.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.